Information presented in the following program is for entertainment purposes only and should not be taken as a statement of fact.
It's time to take another talk down memory lane. Join us as we explore the people, places, and events that made and make this area an exciting and vibrant place to live. Now, with this week's tale from South Florida, here's your host, Bill Monty.
Welcome to Tales from South Florida. I'm your host, Bill Monty, and this week we take another talk down memory lane and discuss the tale of Flipper and Miami Vice. Now, the list of television shows and movies filmed in or about South Florida and this area go back decades. It probably started with the Bogart classic Key Largo. Maybe there was something before, but people have been fascinated by our region and wanted to see it on the large and small screens for as long as I've been alive. Now, some of the shows that filmed here, or were supposedly set here, were Burn Notice. I'm not sure if you remember that one. Ballers, that starred Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I'm not sure if that's still on or not. Bloodline, an HBO show set in the Florida Keys. I love that show. If for nothing else, I just love the scenery. Dexter, Narcos. Recently, not like yesterday, but a few years ago, The Marvelous Miss Maisel filmed down here for some of their scenes. Two shows, Jane the Virgin and The Golden Girls. Picture it, Miami Beach, 1927. They were set in Miami, but they didn't film here. They did some exterior shots and things like that for the credits and for transition scenes, but that was all filmed in Los Angeles. But it's South Florida's sunny climate, our diverse neighborhoods, our landscapes. All of this continues to attract filmmakers and TV producers, or it did until the state decided to chase all that money away by taking away the tax breaks that they gave all the movie companies. And then they went to Georgia and Alabama and North Carolina and Canada. But this used to be a hopping place for film and TV and commercial business. Not as much anymore. That's sad, isn't it? So whether it's the streets of Miami, the tranquil beauty of the Florida Keys, our area provides an ideal scene for captivating stories. Now, for me, my first impressions of South Florida came from television. I was still a boy, we didn't live here yet, and I would thrill to the adventures on TV of Sea Hunt and Flipper. Flipper especially caught my attention because, well, it was Flipper. There was a boy about my age and his brother, who was about my brother's age, and they cavorted with a friendly, seemingly highly intelligent denizen of the sea. I like the theme song, too. They call him Flipper, Flipper. Once I moved here, the plethora of film and television shows that were filmed in this area, they became must-see movies and must-see TV shows for us. Films like Elvis Presley's Follow That Dream, and then Clambake, Jerry Lewis filmed The Bellboy down here at the Fountain Blue Hotel, Frank Sinatra did Tony Roma, can't remember which one that was now. Of course, Flipper, and then there was another show set in the Everglades that starred Dennis Weaver and Clint Howard, Ron Howard's little brother. It was called Gentle Ben. Not sure if anyone remembers that show. Flipper was a television show that aired from 1964 until 1967 and created a love for dolphins that the world had never known. Some people called it the aquatic lassie because Flipper was always helping out his human friends. Now, there were two films before the TV show. One was called Flipper, Ingenious, and the other was Flipper's New Adventure. And the success of these movies inspired the series. The character of Flipper and the idea for the show was created by Jack Cowden and Riku Browning. Now, I don't know if you know that name, Riku Browning, or not, but you do know who he is. You probably don't know the face at all. So he was famous as an actor, diver, did a lot of underwater stunt work, but probably most well known as playing the monster or the creature in Creature from the Black Lagoon and the other ones that came after it. The show was produced by the legendary Ivan Tors, who built the Ivan Tors Studio in North Miami. I think it's on 125th. And that's where the interiors for Flipper and Gentle Ben were often filmed. Ivan Tors Studio later became Greenwich Studios, and we're going to talk more about that a little bit later on. So Flipper followed the adventures of Porter Ricks, who was a chief warden at Coral Key Park and Marine Preserve, a fictional place, his two sons, Sandy and Bud, and their pet dolphin, Flipper. How do you get to be a pet dolphin? How do you get one of those? I don't know. Speaking of, while the show is set in that fictional marine preserve, it was filmed here in Miami, often in either Key Biscayne or at the Miami's Aquarium theme park. It was so popular, it spawned television and movie remakes in the 1990s. A couple of facts about the show you may not know. You know that sound that Flipper made, that kind of kind of sound? It was actually, that's not a sound that dolphins make. It actually was a recording that was sped up, and it's of a bird, an Australian bird, called the kookaburra. And that's what they used for Flipper's voice. Remember the song, Kookaburra Sits on the Old... So the show was conceived when Rico Browning noticed that his children loved watching Lassie. And he said, well, what if we had a similar show, but perhaps from his days working as an underwater sea creature and everything else that he did, why not have it be a dolphin instead? I'm imagining that he knew more than the general public about how friendly and easy to fall in love with dolphins were. So they used a lot of dolphins to play Flipper. They were all females, by the way. They weren't males because male dolphins often have scars from fighting with other males. So the females, they're less aggressive, and they're easier to work with, I guess. But also, they have smoother and prettier skin. Nice going, ladies. Luke Halpin, who played Sandy in the show, continued to work in the water after the show ended. He worked as a boat pilot, a diver. He became a stuntman, do a lot of water, underwater stunts and things like that, most notably in a show called Miami Vice. And of course, that famous show put Miami right back on the map. And we're going to talk about that right after this break. Cirque du Soleil Echo, under the big top at Gulfstream Park now through April 21st, 2024. Echo is a spectacular performance. Hey, I've seen it. I can tell you, you're going to have a great time. This show combines poetry, stagecraft, daring acrobatics, and technology, and explores that delicate balance between people, animals, and the world we all share. Tales from South Florida listeners have access to special discounted single tickets. How does 25% off sound? And group tickets. To learn more, join our Facebook page, Tales from South Florida, or write to us at talesfromsouthflorida@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link for that special discounted tickets. You'll be buying directly from Cirque du Soleil and not any third-party sellers. Cirque du Soleil Echo, under the big top at Gulfstream Park, now through April 21st, 2024. Be there. Hi, Bill Monte here, and I invite you to join me for my podcast, Bill Monte's Guide for Getting Older. Each episode, I'll be talking about topics that affect older Americans, but don't worry, we'll keep it light, educational, and entertaining. It's not about being old. It's about getting older, and sometimes you need a guide to get you to where you're going. And that's me, Bill Monte's Guide for Getting Older, the podcast for young people who have been alive a very long time. Now, in case you weren't born then, Miami Vice was an American crime drama TV series that showed up on NBC. The series starred Don Johnson as James Sonny Crockett. His first name was James. And Philip Michael Thomas as Ricardo Rico Tubbs. They were two Metro-Dade Police Department detectives working undercover in Miami, and the show ran for five seasons on NBC from 1984 to 1989. The director and also became producer, Michael Mann, directed a film adaptation of that series, which was released in 2006. Besides Johnson and Thomas, the show also featured the wonderful Edward James Olmos as Captain Castillo, Pamela McCool, and Sandra Santiago as Detective Gina Calabresi. Santiago would also appear in The Sopranos as Tony's neighbor, Jeannie Cusimano. Loved her in that role. Well, according to Wikipedia and some other sources, how Miami Vice came about and when and how is up for debate. Like, whose idea was this anyway? Well, one version of events states that Brandon Tartikoff, who at that time was the big honcho at NBC, that he wanted to come up with an idea or a show and base it on the idea of MTV Cops. He later presented this very vague concept to the man who would become the series creator, Anthony Yerkovich, who had worked on another show called Hill Street Blues. Yerkovich, however, has some different memories. He says he actually thought of the show when he learned about something called asset forfeiture statutes that allowed police agencies to confiscate the property of drug dealers and then turn around and use it for whatever they needed to, legally, of course. The idea initially was for a movie about a pair of vice cops in Miami. There was a script written for a two-hour pilot that was going to be called Gold Coast, horrible name, but they later renamed it Miami Vice. And Yurkovich wanted to do it in South Florida because he thought that this new style of police show that they were thinking of needed this new setting. We had enough stuff in New York, Chicago, and L.A. But the person who became most affiliated with making this MTV cop show a hit and a cultural icon was undoubtedly Michael Mann. With so many producers opting to film in L.A., Mann insisted on bringing the production to South Florida. And you got to keep in mind, Miami, and especially South Beach of the 1980s, was nothing like it is today. The crime rate was sky high. The streets of Miami Beach, of South Beach, most of the time empty, except for the people who wanted to either rob you or kill you. They were could be found everywhere. In keeping with the show's title, most of the episodes focused on either drug trafficking or prostitution or other illegal activities like that. Episodes often ended with intense, violent gun battles, which claimed the lives of the criminals before they could be apprehended. There was a feeling in the show of hopelessness, almost, like they couldn't get out on top of this. There was a great cynicism about the show. Yurkovich explained in a later interview, he wanted to put this in Miami because he viewed the area as a sort of modern-day American Casablanca. It was a socioeconomic tide pool. So many people from refugees from Central America and Cuba, already a huge Cuban-American community, and then there was all that drug trade. Miami had become a sort of Barbary Coast, a free enterprise gone berserk, he stated. And that's true. I mean, back then, if you weren't alive at the time or you just don't remember, you didn't live here at the time, it was very violent. Every night on the news, people were being killed. Gun battles were happening in the streets of Miami and on South Beach. Drive-by shootings with Uzis and machine guns were happening. It was like something out of the 1920s Chicago movies that you see, except it was happening in Miami, and it was happening right then. The area had been predominantly Jewish, of people that moved from the north, mostly New York and that area from the northeast. So its heyday, big heyday, was the 50s and the 60s, maybe the 40s too. But by the time the 70s came around, it was starting to go downhill fast. By the time the 80s hit here, the early 80s, it was really bad. What you had was an elderly population that couldn't defend itself and couldn't afford to move anywhere else. So when he says Barbary Coast, it really was like that. The show drew heavily upon 1980s new wave culture and is noted for its integration of contemporary pop and rock music and stylish or stylized visuals. People magazine said that Miami Vice was the first show to look really new and different since color TV was invented. And that's what Vice was. Was it the greatest storytelling or the best television? No. But it was must-watch TV because of the style, because it was reshaping how we looked at TV, how we thought about television shows. This was something that was all new. While the first few episodes contained elements of standard police procedures, the producers soon just abandoned that in favor of more distinctive styles. They were influenced by the Art Deco revival that was happening in the beach, not really so much at that time, so they didn't allow any earth tone type of colors to be used. So what we know now is Art Deco on South Beach, back then, was kind of like Art Deco decay. All those hotels that you know now, all those homes in that area, they didn't look like they do now. They looked pretty, pretty bad. Vice, when it would show up to shoot in the area, if they needed to, they would actually paint the side of a hotel or the front of a hotel or a house or a building, because so many things just weren't appealing. They had to make it look newer. I believe that you can trace the revival of South Beach and the Art Deco revival that really came on strong in the 90s directly. You can draw a line directly to Miami Vice. If that show had not come here, I don't know what would have happened with all of that. The clothes worn on Miami Vice had significant influence on men's fashion. It popularized, in fact, let's just say it, it invented men wearing t-shirts under stylish Italian jackets. Don Johnson's typical attire of Italian sport coat, t-shirt, white linen pants, and slip-on sockless loafers became a hit. Big hit with me right now, those sockless loafers. Similarly, Crockett's perpetually unshaven appearance sparked a minor fashion trend inspiring men to wear designer stubble at all times. Go look at pictures of yourself or of your grandfather or of your father from back then. If he could grow a beard, I guarantee you it was a stubble. The colors had to be muted. They had to be pastels. So during this time, I was working at a talent agent office. And we booked actors for speaking parts or as extras, whatever might be on Miami Vice and other film projects in the area. And when you went to work on that show, you had to understand exactly what they were looking for. You had to show up with the colors that they insisted on. God, I wish back then I'd invested in a clothing company that made clothes in pastel colors because I'd still be rich today. So there was no black clothes, red, dark blue, grays, pink, yellow, fuchsia, light green. Those were the acceptable colors. Some Hawaiian shirts, but they had to be muted. They couldn't be big and bright. Miami Vice was one of the first American network television programs to broadcast in stereo. Back then, we were all hooking up our TVs to our stereo system. So having that sound experience, this was also something new. Why did we have to have the sound? Because the music was so great. Again, it's MTV Cops. They were bringing in the best musicians that they possibly could. They were picking up the songs that were hot on the radio and bringing them onto the show. Or they were bringing the songs onto the show and they became hot on radio. The show cast was perfect for what was being shown. Interesting to note that originally the producers wanted Nick Nolte or Jeff Bridges for the role of Sonny Crockett. Back then they were pretty big stars and you didn't have people jumping to do TV the way they do now. Mickey Rourke also considered for the role. That I cannot see at all. But it was Don Johnson and Philip Michael Thomas who were chosen to be the vice cops. By then, Johnson was 34 years old, and while they had some doubts about him, they turned out to be wrong. Little side note, Jimmy Smits played Eddie Rivera, Sonny's ill-fated partner who died in that pilot episode. Many of you might remember Jimmy Smits from either L.A. Law or he became later big in the Star Wars movies. After two seasons, Don Johnson threatened to walk away from the series. Network was ready to replace him with Mark Harmon, who became a big star in NCIS. That got Johnson back in line. Despite the Miami setting, the producers initially planned to film the series in Los Angeles. However, by the time production began, the decision had been made to shoot in Miami itself. And of course, when needed, they'd also film around Broward and Palm Beach counties if they needed to. Among the many well-known bands and artists, as well as underground or new wave associated acts who contributed music to the show were Roger Daltrey, Pete Townsend, Jackson Browne, Meatloaf, Phil Collins, Bryan Adams, Tina Turner, Pink Floyd, ZZ Top, Dire Straits, Glenn Frey, Eric Clapton, and so many more. Besides providing the soundtrack for the series, many actors or actresses, musicians, comedians, athletes, celebrities, they appeared throughout the show's 5-season run. They played so many different roles, from drug dealers to undercover cops. Some of those people who appeared were Leonard Cohen, Miles Davis, Glenn Frey again, Willie Nelson, Ted Nugent, Frank Zappa, from Kiss, Gene Simmons. They also had up-and-coming stars that were appearing on there, people like Viggo Mortensen, Liam Neeson, Bruce Willis, Julia Roberts. Your humble narrator here, me, Bill Monty. I appeared a few times in Miami Vice. Slow down. I was an extra. But I want to tell you one quick story. So I'm shooting one day on South Beach, and we take our break. I go to the truck and get my, you know, the craft truck and get my lunch. And I go sit under the tent that's shielding us from the sun because we're right on the beach. And I sit with this young man who I thought was another extra. Turns out he was the guest star for the show. And so we're talking, and I said, well, have, you know, have I seen you in anything? And he's like, I don't know, probably not, but I just finished a movie. It's going to come out in a few months, so I hope you'll see it. And I said, well, what's it about? He said, have you ever heard of Richie Havens? I said, yeah. And he said, well, it's a movie about his life. It's called La Bamba. And the actor I was speaking to was Lou Diamond Phillips, who was a hell of a nice guy. We had a great lunch, a great conversation. Then he went back on set to get shot down. And I went back on set to stand at the back of a crowd where you can't see me at all if you ever see that scene again. So, But he was a really nice guy. And it was always nice to see those kind of people and get to run into them. I have to say, most of the cast of Miami Vice, especially comes to mind Philip Michael Thomas and Edward James Olmos, were so very nice to the extras when they came on. They never talked down to them and always made them feel like they were part of what was going on. So the show was a big hit initially, but after 3 years, some of the cracks started showing. After deteriorating ratings during the fourth season, NBC planned to just order a short fifth season of only 13 episodes, but settled for another full run, which either way, full or shortened, was going to be the final season. The two-hour series finale Freefall aired in May of 1989, and except for a couple of episodes that didn't air but were aired later on as lost episodes, Miami Vice was over. Appeared in the 1990s on USA Network, and I think now you can find it on, I don't know, maybe Prime or Hulu, somewhere. If you want to feel nostalgic, go and look it up. But the show's reputation has grown over time. Television critics Alan Sepinwall and Matt Zoller-Seitz ranked Miami Vice as the 51st greatest American television series of all time in their 2016 book TV, The Book. To quote them, Miami Vice superimposed ripped from the headline details about drug smuggling, arms dealing, and covert war onto a pastel noir dreamscape. It gave American TV its first visionary existential drama. Well said. That is so true. And that is the impact that it has. Even 40 years after Miami Vice first aired, it is still responsible for its share of tourist visits to the city. So a salute to you, Miami Vice. And Flipper, too, while we're at it. Did you ever watch or appear on Miami Vice like I did? Were you influenced by the style and the music? If so, I would love to hear from you at 754-800-3170. Leave me a voicemail, or you can email me at talesfromsouthflorida@gmail.com. By the way, quick shout out here. A few episodes ago, I mentioned I had been recognized at a Publix, but neglected to get the name of the person. Well, thank you for reaching out, and this is a special hello and thank you to Melissa and her husband, plus their friend Christine especially, for introducing Melissa and her husband to the show. I do appreciate it, and your support, as always, is appreciated. Also, a shout-out to a couple of listeners, Leanne, Kevin, Serafina, Robert G., TJ, Elliot, Kathleen. Thank you so much for listening and supporting. I'm going to try and get to all of you and give you a shout-out on the show eventually, just don't have time to do it today, but a huge appreciative hug from me to all of you. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button to stay up to date on new episodes, specials, and so much more. And if you haven't done so, please join our Facebook group, Tales from South Florida, to get behind-the-scenes information like the discount code to Cirque du Soleil. I'm so glad that you joined me for this talk down memory lane, and hope that we can continue to meet as we explore more Tales from South Florida. Remember, be kind whenever possible. It's always possible. This is Bill Monty. Thank you for listening.
Only $50.